7. A surprising sighting. A daytime sighting of a bat on the Norfolk coast sets our columnist, Norfolk Wildlife Trust Ambassador Nick Aitchison, thinking.
Early one morning in September, I found myself bobbing in the briny of Burnham Overy Staithe in North Norfolk. This, of itself, is nothing unusual. In summer and autumn, I swim as often as I can. This year, my sea swimming session began off Brancaster as early as March. The astute reader may detect a dab of poetic license here. I ran into the sea in March and ran back out again as quickly as my frigid limbs could carry me. I'm used to seeing seabirds and shorebirds as I swim. All through summer, sandwich terns and little terns are common overhead. In autumn, I have seen stately lines of gannets and little groups of dunlin and ringed plover dodging waves. Early September is the best time of year to see scarce seabirds migrate past Norfolk, so perhaps I can be forgiven a momentary misidentification while swimming on that September morning. Looking out to sea, I saw a small and fluttery form an inch or two above the waves. It being seabird season, and this being the sea, my mind resolved this little waif into a storm petrel. All storm petrels are rare in Norfolk. Leach's storm petrel, which breeds very widely on rocky islands in the North Atlantic and North Pacific, is seen in small numbers from the Norfolk coast most years, almost always on wild and stormy days. For a teacup tiny seabird, Leach's storm petrel is sheer-winged and courses above the waves with something like a dinky albatross's grace. The weakling flight I seem to see, and remember I was watching with the naked eye for only seconds, while executing a very natty breaststroke, is more associated with the European storm petrel, which breeds only around North European coasts and, a separate subspecies, in the Mediterranean. Despite a large chunk of its global population nesting on islands off Wales and Scotland, the European storm petrel is a very rare bird indeed off Norfolk. Could it be that I was seeing such a rarity while floating in the sea? Well, no. As the fluttering creature grew closer, I saw that it was not a bird at all. It was a bat. A mid-brown, small to medium-sized bat. Though, as we only ever see bats in darkness, judging their size in daylight can be tricky. A few minutes later, another bat flew in above the waves, likewise vanishing inland. Later that day, the counter recorder for mammals sent round a message asking for observations of bats flying in from the sea. We are lucky to have county recorders for many groups of organisms, including mammals, whose voluntary role is to compile observations of species in their taxonomic groups. Though I was highly likely to have been alone in seeing migrant bats while sea swimming off Norfolk, my observation was clearly part of a larger pattern. The next weekend, I had the privilege of speaking at an event at Spurnburn Observatory in Yorkshire. Earlier in the day, I had listened with fascination to ecologist Dr. Amy Schwartz as she spoke on migrant bats in the UK. My bats, as I had rightly surmised, were Nathusius's pipistrelles, and they were part of an unprecedented daylight arrival of the species along the east coast of the UK. You could be forgiven for never having heard of Nathusius's pipistrelle. Indeed, you could be forgiven for never having heard of Leisler's bat or Bechstein's bat, the whiskered bat, or even the serotin. For bats are nocturnal, and we largely are not. And bats, let us not forget, are flying mammals, the only ones, and we emphatically are not. What's more though, living all around us, British bats inhabit an entirely different sensory universe to ours, navigating through complex 3D habitats and hunting all their food by means of echolocation. Even in the UK, where natural history has been as closely studied as in any country on earth, the lives of many bats are thickly veiled in mystery. We often hear of politicians promising to slash environmental legislation to prevent bats and newts from hindering growth. As an environmentalist, I take exception to bats and newts being scapegoated for the limitations of human economies. These animals are, as the modern expression goes, staying in their lane, wishing only to survive, to pass their genes to future generations. They have no beef with us, much though modern humanity has decimated their habitats and hugely reduced their populations. Philosophically, though, there's a deeper problem with slashing laws enacted to protect the most vulnerable of species. A mere two paragraphs ago, we agreed that most of us could be forgiven for never having heard of Nathusius's pipistrel, nor of the whiskered bat, nor Leisler's bat, the serotine, indeed most of the 19 bats considered to inhabit the UK. Could it be right, I wonder, for us to remove the legislation protecting species so little known that most of us have never heard of them? Can it be right to allow their habitats to be destroyed before we have even paid them sufficient respect? As fellow denizens of these islands, to ask of their lives, their needs, their populations, and declines. I say that it is not right to trash the homes and habitats of creatures we have never studied, most of which were here millennia before we ourselves arrived. Not right to put our endless human greed above the basic survival needs of other species. Not right, and not remotely wise, to unravel the very ecosystems that support us too, and all our economies. But I'm notoriously naive, given to swimming in the sea, welcoming vagrant bats ashore. What could I possibly know?